you and I have been doing this for a long time. There are guys that we'll talk about, everybody else talks about, and that players will kind of be like, eh. They're in awe. These are big leaguers. They're in awe of what Ellie can do.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week yet again with the Reds in town by the Athletic senior baseball writer extraordinaire. Did you get all your titles right?
I don't know. You're the radio guy. Look at that. That radio voice? Like, you could be selling cars.
I've gotten better through the years, haven't I?
You've gotten more traditional.
More traditional. That's what I'm going for. More traditional. That, of course, is C. Trent Rosecrans, writer for the Athletic, longtime beat writer in Cincinnati. And let us begin where all conversations about the Cincinnati Reds must begin. Ellie De La Cruz, has the ball landed yet?
You know, it's really funny you mentioned that. I went up to Andrew Abbott, played with De La Cruz last year in Chattanooga and then this year in Louisville. I said, Andrew, quick question. Where would you put that homer he hit the other day on your list of homers you've seen from him? He goes, oh, probably top five. Four or five. Yeah, maybe top five. Like, there are three or four that are more memorable to him.
Yeah, that he didn't question.
Yeah.
Is this series an interesting one for the team you follow, the team you cover, the Reds, in the sense that they are on the rise and the Cardinals are trying not to be on the fall?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people saw this as best case scenario, a bridge year, right? Well, this division's so bad that there's zero reason to say that this team can't contend.
You're talking about the Reds?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you can probably say that about the Cardinals, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Cardinal Devil magic is real. Like, how many times have we seen it where you put them dead and somebody, like, sacrifices some kind of thing and they come back and do it?
It's toaster ravioli.
Oh. Now, I'll say some stuff about St. Louis. I love me some toasted ravs.
Yeah. So you know what it means to sacrifice a toasted rav, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Those things, oh, man. Now that's what I want. Thanks a lot, Derek.
You're welcome. This has been your advertisement for toasted ravioli. Do you have a favorite?
The one in front of me.
What? Oh, I see. I was like, all right, gotcha. So, Ellie De La Cruz, though. Ellie De La Cruz. For real? What? Describe to people who have not seen him play how dynamic a talent he is.
Here we are. We're at the top. And you just look down. Your eyes... We're at the top of Busch Stadium, right? This is about... you could get a little bit higher, but not much. He's down there right now. Your eyes go straight to this guy. He's unmistakable. One of the other players is like, yeah, you know what he's like? He's like one of those guys in Avatar. He's bigger and stronger. I mean, I was down there, and the hitting coach in Louisville said, yeah, he hits it as far as Judge. He runs like Billy Hamilton, and he has Rafael Furcal's arm.
So he comes to Busch, and he's at cleanup, and he's playing shortstop. Cleanup and shortstop in his fourth game, right? Already has a home run, already has a triple, already is a T-shirt sensation in Cincinnati, though you are a T-shirt sensation in Cincinnati. So, yeah, so it doesn't take much. But what's the upside here?
Yeah, so it's funny. I've talked about this 2 years ago. August 2021. Is that 2 years ago? Yeah, it's 23. It's less than 2 years ago. I'm at a hotel in Louisville. I'd been to Louisville covering a bats game for something. It was August of 2021. I get a call from an agent. And he says, hey, I got a prospect you need to hear about. And he's like, there's this guy just kind of went to low A from Arizona named Ellie De La Cruz. He's a 6'5 shortstop. Where did he come from? I'd never heard of this. And he said, I was told by a Reds person, we have found our Tatis. He's like Tatis Light. So Tatis Light was the ceiling, say, 20 months ago, mm-hmm. 22 months ago. A lot can happen between June and November.
Yes. Everybody, he's going to make an age joke here about our birthdays, and it never gets old. No. And sometimes it's amazing because I can be introduced as what, the wizened or whatever, the old longtime beat writer, and you can be introduced as the spunky new kid on the block in the same show, even though we're separated by what was the months again?
June and November, yeah.
I mean, it's like we watched different cartoons as a kid. We had different cereals as a kid those 2 months.
It's five. Yeah, it's five. So
people of my generation can do the math.
Give me a calculator, man. Hey, we didn't have calculators when I did the SAT, so that's my age. I'm still in your area. Anywho.
We had Abacai.
Where was I? August 2021. So he went from Tatis Light to that ceiling, and the floor then was he could never get out of A-ball. You know, it's possible.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah.
To now, well, then his ceiling went to, okay, he's Tatis, to best player in the game, to generational talent. That's the ceiling.
Wow.
It's not unheard of. Like, you watch this guy enough, he's like, the superlatives just can't stop. He could be that good. Now, that's, if he's, you know, a quarter of or three quarters of Tatis, that's a really good ball player. That's an all-star, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to, you know, sniff my nose if he becomes an all-star. The funny thing is the floor has gone from couldn't make it out to A-ball to maybe Aristides Aquino to a above average shortstop who maybe doesn't, probably strikes out too much, may not get on base enough, but when he is on base, he'll still steal a bunch of bags and he'll still hit 25 to 30 homers.
That's pretty good.
Floor.
Yeah.
That's the
all-star.
Yeah. All-star shortstop.
It's interesting because they got three teams now in the division that have these tall players that they're all hoping are generational players. In Pittsburgh, it's O'Neill Cruz. In Cincinnati, it's Ella De La Cruz. And in St. Louis, it's Jordan Walker, who you haven't had a chance to see much. You'll see him in left field to start this series and probably a lot of them in the left field. But these are the guys that all three teams think will lead them into this next era of contention. And they're all like towers. Two of them play the infield, play demanding positions at shortstop. And Jordan Walker came up as a third baseman and only doesn't play third base because of Nolan Arenado being a Cardinal. So, I mean, what do you make of that? I don't want to call it a trend, but that potential era in this division.
Yeah, if anybody could pitch, it'd be pretty impressive.
Yeah, no kidding. Maybe he should pitch, too.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's... But we see it all over the place. You see athletes. Like, athletes just keep getting better. They're training.
But we're tearing down some taboos, though, too, in the sense that these guys, these tall guys are playing shortstop. These tall guys who play shortstop and hit, you know, like, you know, power home runs. They're getting to stay at shortstop. They're not growing out of shortstop.
Right. I was talking with somebody in the clubhouse today. Like, I don't think Ellie's 6. What's he listed at? 6'5"? What's he on there? 6'5"?
Yeah.
Like, he's at least 6'6". He could be 6'7".
Well, that's what Jordan Walker comes to spring training. He's 6'6". You know how many guys have played something like 300 games, more than 300 games in the majors at Jordan Walker as a position player at Jordan Walker's height? Do you have a guess for how many? And weight, his height and weight. So 6'6". Judge Stanton, sure. Frank Howard. And then a guy you know well, Adam Dunn.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
It's a small list.
Yeah, it is. And those guys are all can do some good things.
Well, and with the, what O'Neill Cruz and Ellie De La Cruz, they wouldn't qualify because of the weight. They're not carrying as much weight.
Yeah, I mean, the De La Cruz is just, when you look at him, you're like, where does the power come from? But it is so quick. Watch that home run. Look at where that pitch was. That's up and in. And he just explodes on it. I had one of his coaches in the minors last year tell me, it's like, he's like a walking, tightened rubber band. You take a rubber band, take it when we used to have the pencils, and we'd tighten them as hard as you could. That's what his muscles are.
Tension string.
Tension string.
Yeah. Tension string, yeah.
And you have buried the lead that he's a switch hitter.
Yeah, and he's a switch hitter. And like for a while, I was like, well, you know, he doesn't have as much power from the right side. This year, he had a 118.8 double from the right side in a game that he had three hits with an exit velocity over 116. And the double was right-handed. I think one of the homers, and then he homered from both sides of the plate at that thing. So so homers from both sides of the plate at 116 plus.
If he is good enough, this is what gets me. If he's good enough to, within the first week of his arrival, play shortstop and back cleanup for the Reds, why wasn't he here before? And what does it say about the lineup before he got here that he could hit cleanup? They didn't have somebody better than him?
I don't know who does, potentially. But here's what it was. If you go back, look, he started, and his hamstring was hurt, so he started on the IL in AAA. He was two for his first 21. And the first half of his AAA time, he had like 25 walks, or 25 strikeouts and two walks. Then he took a month where he just decided that, oh, wait, if they're not going to throw me pitches I can hit, I'm not going to swing. And he had, I think it was like 25 strikeouts and 23 walks. You know, I was down there, and some of the veteran guys I was talking to in Louisville were like, they're just pitching him like Bonds. And he's started doing the Bonds thing where he'll take his walks. And so I was at a game in Louisville, and this is where it gets a little different. I'm in Louisville. Matt McClain, who's pretty darn good himself. Matt McClain, or Ellie walks, steals second. McClain walks, and as the catcher throws the ball back to the pitcher, just kind of nonchalantly, Ellie steals third. Like, you just, there was, did you see the highlight the other day? Guy, he's on first. Guy dub or singles. Ellie goes first to third. Throw comes to third from Adam Duvall, Gold Glove outfielder. Was playing rehab for Wooster. Back end runner takes second. Third baseman throws it to second. Ellie takes home.
Scores.
I mean, it gets back to my question. I get it that he was 2 for 21, and I get that he was injured. But it always strikes me as like, what kind of team did you have before he arrived that he's the cleanup hitter? And what does that say about maybe how the view of the season's changed?
Well, what they had was they were building this for Ellie De La Cruz and Matt McClain and Christian Encarnacion Strand. They wanted those guys to get a little bit under their feet down there. And, you know, I would have to look. Tyler Stevenson was probably batting cleanup quite a bit.
Yeah.
And he's a good, you know, he's a good hitter. He's off to a slower start, but he's coming around. And, you know, when they get all these guys we were talking about the other day, he could be your 7 hitter.
Oh, Stevenson? Yeah, because where's Ellie De La Cruz going to hit?
But Ellie's going to bat anywhere from 2 to 4.
And you mentioned it. He's not alone. Like, you have Matt McClain, who I think won Player of the Week after his performance against the Cardinals, correct?
Was it against the Cardinals? Yeah, his second week in the big leagues.
Right, it was
National League Player of the Week.
Yeah, he sweetened that with his performance against the Cardinals. Spencer Steer, who's part of this, and Jonathan India is not too far removed from being Rookie of the Year. So it's not like Ellie De La Cruz is alone in what could be a really robust Reds lineup.
So 2021, the Reds have three guys get Rookie of the Year votes. Jonathan India, the winner. Tyler Stevenson and Vladimir Gutierrez, who's the starter, had Tommy John last year. Last year, Alexis Diaz gets votes.
I know of his brother.
Yeah. He's Alexis Diaz is probably... He's arguably the best closer in baseball right now and the second best in his family.
Yeah. He's going to have a Chapman-like run against the Cardinals if they're not careful.
When you say Chapman level, that could be a lot of things.
Where he pitched the equivalent of a no-hitter and they went a decade without scoring a run against him.
That's pretty good. So, yeah. And then you had Hunter Green. Yeah. Nick Lodolo got Rookie of the Year votes last year, too. That was the one I was forgetting.
Yeah.
He's hurt right now. Graham Ashcraft. And then Andrew Abbott is a guy who could get Rookie of the Year votes this year. Saturday starter.
Can you make the case that the Reds are the best team in the NL Central? Could you make that today? If I asked you to make an argument that the Reds are today the best team in the NL Central, could you do that?
Maybe as well as you could for anybody. Like this division, you can make that argument for.
Could you? Because you can make a lot of cases that they could win the division. You could say, well, they could happen into it. You could say, well, this team has some talent in the right place. But could you go point by point and make the case that the Reds are the best team in the division?
I think I could. I don't know that I would, but I think I could.
Let's try to tease this out a little bit. Who has the best lineup that you've seen?
In the division?
In the division.
It should be the Cardinals, right?
Well, it probably mathematically is. I mean, they're one of the higher scoring teams in the division, but they are not all that great in late innings, so it kind of shows up there. One of the reasons they're not all that great in late innings is folks like Diaz, but also that the chances aren't coming to the guys who hit the best. You know, they're not getting Goldschmidt and Arenado up in the moments to decide those. So when you think about that, I mean, they probably have the best lineup. They're among the lead leaders with runners in scoring position and OPS and slugging. So you can probably make the case that they have the best lineup, sure.
Yeah. But, like...
Who is the best rotation?
I guess.
I mean, it's by default, whoever the case.
I guess Milwaukee.
Maybe.
I mean, if they're healthy, like... I mean, I feel pretty good most nights if they're healthy with Hunter Green... Nick Lodolo, Graham Ashcraft, and Andrew Abbott, and then, heck, Ben Lively's been a great for a five. Maybe.
And then bullpen, probably the Brewers, if you go, like, who has the best at the end and move forward. Reds are pretty close.
Yeah, they're not bad. I mean, they have some guys who have had some good years. They've been using them a lot, and so that's going to be down the line. But that guy at the end's 14 for 14. And back to the lineup I was going to mention this. You're talking about the Cardinals and their deficiencies late. The Reds have 19 come-from-behind wins. They came back from 5-4 against the Dodgers this week.
Yeah.
The Dodgers had won 118 straight when they had led by five or more runs.
It's early. I guess bullpen-wise, but more the elasticity of the roster, you probably have to go with the Pirates. Pirates have a real pesky lineup, a lot of matchup spots. They cycle through guys. They use a 40-man roster. They're very impressive, good manager. So maybe they have the edge there. It's early, but we have seen the arrival of a charismatic, talented player change the course of this division. Willy Adames did it, coming to the Brewers a few years ago from Tampa Bay. Does Ellie have that potential?
Yeah. He's you and I have been doing this for a long time. There are guys that we'll talk about, everybody else talks about, and that players will kind of be like, eh. They're in awe. These are big leaguers. They're in awe of what Ellie can do. There are these guys. Matt McClain is really fast. And he was joking that first night, Ellie almost ran up his back. And he's just like, it's like, well, you could do that. He's like, no, none of us could do this. And like Matt McClain, perfect example. first rounder in 2021, the first rounder position player from that draft to make the big leagues. And he comes in and is the guy. 2021, supposed to come in 2022. You know, everybody comes in like that, and they're the guy, especially a college shortstop, someone with those things. And he just, like, loves Ellie. They have the best relationship. Shortstops don't like to play anything but shortstop. Shortstops can play anything but shortstop, everything but including shortstop. But no shortstop will ever say that they're anything but a shortstop, even at heart. But they're old. You know, I bet Miguel Cabrera still thinks he's a shortstop. And they don't share well, because that's the job. You don't share when you're the shortstop, right? Those two switched off every day at shortstop. For a AA and AAA, they're doing it in the big leagues now. There's zero animosity. You can't get more different. Matt McClain is 5'6", 5'7", at best, 5'8". I don't know. I think he's listed at 5'9", but I think he's really 5'6". Ellie De La Cruz is listed at 6'5", and is probably 6'6", 6'7", from the Dominican Republic. Matt McClain is from Southern California, played in college. Ellie De La Cruz signed at 16, at 6 foot 135 for $65,000. And these two, the thing is, when you talk to anybody, it is the electricity of Ellie De La Cruz. Like, you know, you saw him on his home run. He does the 4-4 to the bench. He does all sorts of things. And I was talking to some of the veteran players down in Louisville, and they're like, yeah, I could see how some people might not like that, but it's him. It's all legitimate. It's all pointed at his own dugout. And he's like... They were also said that he's the same guy when he's 0-for-4. He's the guy hyping everybody up. If he's struck out 4 times, he's on that top step of the dugout, hyping everybody up. He's the biggest cheerleader there is. He just loves the freaking game.
So how do the Reds put it together? What do they need to put this together to go from a June sensation to a July factor?
A healthy rotation. I mean, of course, you could say that for any team in baseball, right? The healthy rotation and these guys to just keep doing what they're doing. Because when you get TJ Friedl back, I mean, you're talking a team that's going to steal a lot of bags with Friedl. Say the lineups: Friedl, McClain, India, Stevenson, or De La Cruz, Jake Fraley. You've got some guys, and then there's on the way Christian Encarnacion Strand, who's a young guy they got in along with Spencer Steer for Tyler Mahle, and he has like 15 homers in 40 games in AAA, and he's batting .340 with a .420 on base, slugging .700, and Louisville's park is not a joke.
Yeah. It's.
And that's the other thing with Ellie. Ellie does play his home games in a park that's a joke. His teammates all laugh. He has like 3 or 4 where he's popped it up opposite field, slammed his bat down, and just kind of started running in Louisville. And they go out opposite field.
Yeah.
He's going to pop up 10 to 15 homers a year at Great American.
Oh, sure. Great American small park.
Yeah. Did you come up with that right now?
Just now while I was thinking about it. Actually, I call it the biggest phone booth in the NL Central. Do they have phone booths anymore? Did I date myself? Do you know what a phone booth is, young man?
It's like my daughter once asked me about one of those old-timey music-playing things. It's like...
Said Wurlitzer?
Like a record player?
Did you go symphony orchestra? Harpsichord?
We figured it out. She meant an iPod.
That's awesome. That's great. So we have both seen, and St. Louis fans have seen, a good Reds team centered around a great Joey Votto. And
now, when was the last time that you and I talked, and we've been talking for about 20 minutes now, and this is the first time the name Joey Votto came up?
I think we've gone that before, but usually it's because like we get wrapped up in the minutia of some other inside joke that we're having that we don't get to Joey Votto. But you're right, like that's a fair question. Like, when was the last athletic story you wrote that wasn't an oral history of Joey Votto in some way? So now you have new material.
Yeah, oral history of Ellie De La Cruz.
Ellie De La Cruz, according to Joey Votto. I cannot wait to. Oh, you have an idea. We've seen good Reds teams. I'm sure, and I've seen sellouts in Cincinnati. Seen some great opening days. What does a charismatic Reds team mean to Cincinnati? That's a different thing. What does a charismatic Reds team mean to Cincinnati and that market?
Yeah, that's what's going to be fun to watch. 2012 team was really good.
It was really good.
I mean, that was a really, really good team. They weren't charismatic. This one's charismatic. It's fun. It's young. It's loose. And the Ellie De La Cruz just exudes charisma. And his name is freaking Ellie De La Cruz. How fun is that?
And he wears 44. It's not subtle, man. It's not subtle.
Well, I was talking to, Rick Stowe is the clubhouse manager. He's the one who gives out. He was so proud of himself first day of spring training because he gave him 44. And I was thinking about it. I was like, and I think I did a interview with Eric Davis and asked him about it. And he's
you
like,
did. I remember the Futures game, right?
No. It was in the spring.
Oh, in spring. Okay.
It was after he put on 44.
Yeah.
And I remember, he was like, oh, yeah, that's fine. You know, he's never retired. So, and other guys have worn it. Mike Leake, Adam Dunn, Kyle Waltrip.
That's right.
Aristides Aquino. But he said, that's going to look really weird at shortstop, though. I've never seen a shortstop wear 44. And Eric just said, you've never seen an Ellie De La Cruz before.
That's a good one. That's Eric Davis, cool, man.
The coolest. Like, Eric Davis, though. Like, we were sitting around. I was sitting around with some longtime baseball people. And, we talk comps and how nobody likes comps. And, how can you even comp this guy and whatever. And the closest we could get is switch hitting Eric Davis.
We'll see how those steals work out, but it's a different game. But maybe steals get back into the game. Eric Davis had one of the more amazing, underrated seasons of all time.
If you do half of 86 to half of 87, that 162, have you ever done that? Where it's like 48 home runs and 96 stolen bases in 162 game span?
Yeah.
Eric Davis is like, here's a great question about, or kind of like thing with that. I was talking to Barry Larkin the other day, and Hall of Famer. Did you want to do that?
Shortstop, Hall of Famer, Cincinnati Red, wore 11.
Yes.
You've said Ellie De La Cruz is four times as good.
Yes.
I'm sorry, his number is four times as large. I just got carried away with what you were saying.
Yes. So he was saying, when the Reds were talking about maybe drafting Derek Jeter.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He said, they asked me, what would you think? Would you move? And he goes, if he's better than me, sure. He's not going to be. But if he's better than me, sure. And he wasn't. I'll go with that.
Derek Jeter was really good.
He was very, very good. But he was not as good of a shortstop.
That's correct, yeah.
So, he was a better all-around. He was a better offensive player.
Yeah.
He was not a better shortstop.
Okay.
And so somebody at the table goes, did they ever talk about moving you? Because Kurt Stillwell was there.
Sure.
Did they ever talk about moving you to center field? And he goes, with ED there? No. Barry Larkin's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And, the thought of Eric Davis-level talent to him is ridiculous. That's the kind of player Eric Davis was. I don't have to tell St. Louis people there. They saw it. They saw it here. Even when he was old and, you just...
Amazing play. We began this conversation by talking about if this weekend here, mid-June, several weeks ago before the trade deadline, several weeks ago before the All-Star game, all of it, but if this was a little bit of, if we over-dramatize it, the Reds on the way up, the Cardinals trying not to fall down. What is the perception of... What is the perception of the Cardinals from the Cincinnati? Do they see them as vulnerable? Where do they see them?
I think they see them in kind of a transition. They're a question mark for the first time in a long time. I don't think there's anybody who thinks, oh, they're cooked. But I don't think there's anybody who thinks they're an inevitability. Like, what is the Thanos?
I'm inevitable.
I'm inevitable. Like, they don't see him like that. And at one time, they kind of were.
But even when they were down, you just figured they were going to Thanos it up and snap their fingers.
18 in a row or some stupid thing.
17 is the record, but.
Yeah, whatever it was.
It might take 18 this year.
It could.
So that feeds into this, right? Like, that gives a team like the Reds buoyancy and confidence. The Cardinals have not. While we talk about, like, look, the division didn't pull away. The division had their chance. They have not pulled away from the Cardinals. They could have done it, but they didn't. But really, another side of that is the Cardinals not climbing back into it quickly has given a team like the Reds, like, well, maybe this is the year.
And you know what? Ellie De La Cruz, Matt McClain, they don't care. Andrew Abbott, don't care. It's interesting. This is a team that is just themselves. The way that Jonathan India plays is the way this team plays. The way that David Bell played is the way this team plays.
And to your point, Matt McClain and Ellie De La Cruz, they only know a last place Cardinals team.
The big leagues, yeah. I mean, and I don't know. This is a different team. It's just a different team, a different feel. You know, maybe they'll come out and look terrible this week, and I'll sound stupid, but this team's it's pretty interesting when you just kind of look at it top to bottom, and they could be good. They have enough talent that on any day they can embarrass somebody.
Not just win.
Yeah.
That is the voice of C. Trent Rosecrans, baseball writer at The Athletic, longtime Cincinnati Reds, beat writer, Cincinnati Inquirer, a bunch of different places, podcast host, all of it.
Nobody can stand me for very long.
That's not true. I have been talking to you for 32 minutes, and somebody is, at least 10 of the people who started this podcast are listening to it 32 minutes through. So look at that.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. This has been the same. Now I can't even do the tagline.
You got to get your deep broadcast.
Oh, I got to do the radio voice again, yeah. You can find all of his work at The Athletic. You can find all of the Constant Cardinals coverage at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and online at stltoday.com. That's where we have chats, game coverage, the 6 a.m. follow from every game. Just tons of Constant Cardinals coverage, a deluge of copy, if you will. You can find the best podcasts in baseball wherever you get your podcasts, including stltoday.com, where we also have a soccer podcast, Dave Matter and Ben Fredrickson hold a Mizzou podcast. Lots of interesting developments over the past week with the Mizzou baseball team, including a new head coach and a new pitching coach who happened to be elected to the team's or to the school's Hall of Fame because of the work he did as the baseball head coach. Tim Jamison is back as pitching coach with Mizzou. They can find that on the Eye on the Tigers podcast with Ben Fredrickson and Dave Matter. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. It's a production of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, stltoday.com, and me. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. For Trent Rosecrans of The Athletic, thank you again for joining me. We'll talk to you soon.
Cool.
That's all you got to say. Cool.